This is Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo, your guide for the next 60 minutes, and I want to thank you for being with us here tonight. We have a really, really special show. I have two guests on tonight, and in the first hour, we're going to have Bob Luca, who is the husband of Betty Andreasen, the most famous abductee of all times. And if you remember last week, we had her daughter, Becky, on to discuss her abduction experiences and alien implants. You can listen to last week's show on our archives. But now for the second half of the program, we have a well-known psychic medium, Helene Olson, from Massachusetts. In fact, I believe she lives near Salem, Massachusetts. And Helene is going to be doing free psychic readings on the air for us tonight. So make sure you get ready to call in. And you can call in to get in line to get a psychic reading with Helene, and also any questions you have for our first guest or for me at 619-639-4606. That's 619-639-4606. The other thing I want to direct your attention to is our radio website. If you go to drjohnradio.com, that is drjohnradio.com, drjohnradio.com, you can find a listing of our upcoming programs and a link to our audio archives and information about our guests, their books, their websites, and how to reach them. So everything you'll need as a guide to our program at drjohnradio.com. Just a couple brief comments about who we're going to be having on some future shows. We have next week Christopher Dunn, who is the author of the best-selling book, The Giza Power Plant, and he has a new book just out called The Lost Technologies of Ancient Egypt. And Chris has been a good friend. I've worked with him for over a decade, and he's one of the an incredible engineer and scientific research on the Shroud. So really excited to have, you know, Chris with us. For future programs, again, you could check our listing, but we're going to have this month and next month Dennis Balthaser, Area 51 and Roswell Investigator, Scott Walter, the world's expert on the Kensington Runestone, Russell Burroughs, the discoverer of Burroughs Cave, and Lon Milo Duquette, the most well-known ceremonial and ritual magician in the world. And next month, I'm going to actually also have on one of the 20 Secret Service men that are still alive that protected JFK and his wife in Dallas when he was shot. And there's a new book out called The Kennedy Detail, JFK's Secret Service Agents Break Their Silence. And he's going to be on, and that's going to be a fascinating show. One last announcement before I bring Bob on. I want to congratulate my son, Stephen, who will be getting married this Sunday to Rahana. So I wish him the best and a happy and long marriage. Okay, I want to bring on Bob Luca. What can I say about Bob? He is an extraordinary individual, not only being married to the most famous abductee of all times, but I don't think there's anything that Bob hasn't been involved in, even ghost hunting. He was also abducted, and the five-volume set about the Andreasen affair abduction, Bob's story is in that also. He's going to be coming on for a full hour in September as a guest to tell his story, and hopefully maybe Betty will say hello. But we got him here tonight for the first half an hour to update us on the Harvard University abductee experiments and anything else he'd like to talk about. So, hey, Bob, are you there?
I sure am, Dr. John, and thank you for having me on.
Hey, thank you so much. You know, it's such a pleasure to have you on. I think the world of you and all your research, and you're just excellent. But anyway, what would you want to talk about first, Bob? What it's like?
Well, a couple things I'd like to cover. The Harvard University experiment, for one, and then maybe we can get into the helicopters after that.
Sure, as long as you promise to give me your recipe for spaghetti sauce before the night's over.
Oh, that's classified. I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, Becky tells me.
Okay. You know, John, I watching TV last night, the night before, there was a program on that covered this Harvard University experiment, which was led by a professor, Richard McNally. And the study was done by a team of psychologists, and the lab tests were conducted by a Dr. Scott Orr. Now, after watching this beginning to end, it just amazes me that the conclusions these people were able to draw from the information they got. And that's what I'd like to talk about, and a couple of cases that prove just how flawed this experiment really was.
Sure.
Okay? In the beginning, what they did, they took a test subject, isolated the subject in a lab on a chair, and the subject was wired with sensors to record facial expressions, heart rate, blood pressure, and so forth. Now, while they're sitting there alone on this chair, they're wearing headphones. And the headphones are telling them in a soft voice that they're nude, they're lying on a table in a craft, and that there are alien beings over them. In other words, they are dictating an alien abduction experience to these people.
Hmm.
What I call a counterfeit experience, really. And the information they got was that the subjects' responses seem very much like the same reactions and emotions that an actual abductee did or would have. Now, after these tests, Professor McNally attributed all abduction experiences to sleep paralysis, further stated the abductees were dreaming with their eyes open, and then he goes on to say that grays do not exist, they are all hallucinations. Excuse me. And he went even further, stating that it's good to have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out.
Hmm.
Me, my opinion, I think this man is arrogant, and I think he's wrong. Now, Einstein made a statement years ago that I think fits perfectly here. He said, if the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts. And that seems to me like what these people did.
Yeah, it sounds like it to me, too.
Okay. Now, first off, Bud Hopkins has a number of cases involving abductions that were witnessed from the ground by other people. Ray Fowler has a whole book on the Allagash abductions, which was a pair of twins and two friends who were abducted at the same time while fishing in a boat out in the Allagash wilderness. So obviously these people were not all sleeping. In my own case, my abduction took place approximately between 10 and 11 a.m. in the morning on a clear, sunny day. So, you know, when I hear stuff like this from these people, I'm wondering, where are they getting this information? And I'd like to bring up an old case that most people listening probably aren't familiar with because it happened in 1964. But it was a highly credible person. It was a police officer named Lonnie Zamora in Socorro, New Mexico, between 5 and 6 o'clock. He was on patrol, and he was chasing a car that went by speeding, and then he suddenly heard a loud roar in the distance accompanied by a bluish-orange flame rising into the air, and he knew that in that area was a dynamite shack. So he thought possibly there'd been an explosion. He abandoned the chase for the speeder, pointed his police car in the direction of the shack, and as he should have done, he radioed his activities to the sheriff's dispatcher. When he arrived at the area where the shack was, where he thought the explosion was, he saw something that he thought was an automobile which had overturned. But he discovered it was an oval-shaped object without windows or doors. The object was about the same bulk or same size as, a mid-sized vehicle. He noticed there was an unusual insignia on the side of the object. Now, here's the killer part. Remember, this is daylight.
Yes.
He noticed two beings that he thought at first to be children. They were dressed in white coveralls, and they were outside of the vehicle.
Were they typically looking as we picture the small aliens?
Well, he was far enough away that he couldn't really make out that kind of detail, but he did notice the size, that they were so small that he at first thought they were children. They got frightened when they noticed him and got back in the vehicle, so he immediately radioed the sheriff's office with the details of the incident. He thought he'd get a closer look at the scene before him, and then boom, there's a loud roar, a bluish flame, and the thing takes off.
Wow.
Now, he hit the ground because he thought it might, you know, something was, that it might have exploded or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw the thing lift off the ground and head southeast. The landing gear, which was down when it was on the ground, had been pulled up into the vehicle. And fortunately, there was a state police sergeant, Sam Chavez, that had intercepted his radio transmission and arrived at the scene just after the craft had lifted off. Okay, so now you got a daylight sighting, you got two credible witnesses, you got the beings, and this was serious enough that the military sent Captain Richard T. Holder, who was uprange commander of the White Sands Proving Grounds, along with an FBI agent, D. Arthur Burns Jr. from the Albuquerque office, a Major William Connor from Kirtland Air Force Base, and a Sergeant David Moody, who was in the area. They all investigated for Air Force, for the Air Force, and I believe it was Moody who was involved with the Project Blue Book file. And, of course, Dr. Ellen Hynek arrived on the 28th.
Oh.
So this is a highly credible case where the government was obviously very interested. This was nothing imaginary because the ground was burned to the point where some of the sand had been fused from heat. The brush in the area was still smoldering when the second police officer got there. And the military people confiscated material that was examined by a chemist. The chemist examined the soil, the bush, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force came in and confiscated all our material. So obviously what we have here is not someone that is in sleep paralysis or dreaming with their eyes wide open, as Professor McNally said. That's why I have a problem with this guy.
Yeah, you know, not only this situation or event, but there's many others like this also that are credible. There's physical data. Boy, would I love to get my hands on some of that material to test, you know, being a scientist. Here's a question. Was this Harvard study, was Dr. John Mack involved in it? Because I remember hearing his name with a study in Harvard back in the 90s, but I'm not sure if it's the same one.
Okay. Dr. John Mack was killed in London by a drunk driver in September 27th of 2004.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. But here's the thing that's very interesting about Dr. Mack. He originally got involved in studying these cases because he believed that possibly some sort of mental illness might be involved. Now, Dr. Mack, as you know, was a psychiatrist, a Pulitzer Prize winner, and a tenured professor at the Harvard Medical School. So he's highly qualified to interview people. Dr. Mack, unlike Professor McNally, did a 10-year-long study of 200 men and women who claimed to have had alien encounter experiences. Many of the people that he interviewed stated that recurrent alien encounters had affected the way they regarded the world, including a heightened spirituality and environmental concern. Now, I can relate to this because before my own experiences, I really didn't give much of a rap about the environment, and I wasn't what you would call a spiritual person. I began to realize after my own experiences, John, that there is so much more to this world that we're just totally oblivious to, and I also began to realize just how delicate the balance is in nature and how fortunate we are to exist at all. And right now, the way we as humans are treating this planet, we're going to have to make some big changes if we want to continue to exist. And I never thought of this stuff before in my life. But after these experiences, it became very important to me.
You know, that's true, isn't it? You know, we get a spiritual experience or something really traumatic, we have to reevaluate our reference frame on how we look at things. So that's very interesting.
No, exactly. You know, I do a lot of things now I never did, like recycle, whatever we can recycle, we recycle. I run my car partially on hydrogen, partially on gasoline to cut down on emissions and so forth. I'm working on a possible power plant right at home to provide some of our electricity that will not pollute. And these are things, as I said before, my experiences, I really had no knowledge of or really didn't care much about. So I can see, you know, what where he's going with this. And the thing is, Dr. Mack, in the end, suggested that the experience of alien contact itself is probably more spiritual in nature, yet nevertheless real. Now, other researchers believe these experiences to be totally of a physical nature, and there are a number of physical trace cases, of course, to support that as well. Now, his thoughts on the alien abduction and the influence on humans can be found in two books he wrote on the UFO phenomena. One was Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, and the other one was Passport to the Cosmos. And anybody interested could pick those up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, when you said a spiritual experience, it actually jives really well with your daughter, Becky, you know, with Becky's interview last week and what she talked about, her ideas of the greys and the elders, and there's a spiritual and angelic realm associated with it. You know, I guess to summarize that too, maybe they had an agenda when they did this Harvard University experiment. Who knows? They just wanted to try to debunk the abduction. And it's unfortunate because this is what really hurts good science. But I think you're right. You know, there's so many good cases. And also, when police officers or other people or pilots report these things, they're told to be quiet. By the way, one thing I want to mention, too, you know, unfortunately, you're only on for a half an hour. And, you know, oh my God, you have so much information. You have, being married to Betty and her, you know, being well-known and her experiences, I'm sure you must be monitored by all sorts of agencies. And I was wondering if you had experiences with black helicopters and people, you know, monitoring your moves, your phone, or whatever.
Absolutely, and it lasted for years. One thing I want to say first, though, regarding Becky being on.
Yes.
You talked about how she has been very accurate as a psychic. Well, I test her from time to time, too. And a short time ago, we were going up to Roanoke, and she was going with us for while we were going shopping. And what I did, I handed her something, and I told her nothing about it. And it was kind of sneaky because what it was a meteor that I have the paperwork with. It's certified. It's real. But I didn't tell her anything. I says, what do you think of this? She held it in her hand, John. I don't think it was 5 seconds. She said, this is very, very old, and it came from very, very far away. And she paused for maybe a couple of seconds more. She says, oh, it's a meteorite. So that was, you know, I test her from time to time, too, because obviously we're all curious about these things.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. I worked with Becky, you know, for several years with our psychometry research. And, you know,
right.
I bet she's tested over 100 archaeological artifacts for me. And if I had to put a statistical accuracy on it, I would put her in a 90%+ range. Most others, and the lady I'm going to have on also has worked with Becky and myself, and also is in 90% range. Most other psychics I've ever known in my research have been around 60%. So Becky is extremely unusual and gifted. So I'm glad you experienced that. It's really mind boggling, isn't it? When she reads
it is,
these
because
objects,
I figured out who's going to guess a meteor.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, I think she will tell me about an object when I first get it, then I'll do the historical research, and she'll be right on. So she's not reading my mind or you know, looking up the information. It's totally amazing.
Exactly.
So what about you're being tapped and monitored? I'm just really curious about that.
Let's start with the helicopters, because that was a big issue with us for years. And I don't want to give away the whole boat, because it would take me an hour to go through the rest of this stuff. But 1978, when the first book came out,
mm-hmm.
we started to see these black helicopters over the house. And they were not seen in the area before we moved in. And I took a couple of pictures of them, and I sent them to Ray Fowler, the author of the books. And there really wasn't much you could make out, you know, from the pictures. Well, for my birthday, I think it was my birthday, Betty purchased a 35-millimeter camera and a telephoto lens. So I started to take pictures of these. I sent them to Ray, and finally he began to think, well, something's wrong here. There are no numbers on these things. Then they started following us wherever we went. And the proof, to me, started out this way. We were living in Connecticut. We're driving down Route 15, and I noticed this helicopter paralleling us along the highway just behind a mountain ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found a little area to pull over. I pulled over quickly, jumped out of the car, put up my camera, and that thing dropped right down behind the ridge, so I couldn't get any pictures. Now, these flights became so frequent that our next-door neighbor, who became a city councilwoman, started to document the flights herself because she knew that they were not there before, you know, we moved in. We stayed in that house for 1 year, and then we moved to another town, Cheshire, Connecticut. Lo and behold, the second day after we were moved in, the helicopters are coming over.
Huh.
Now they got much more bold when we lived in Cheshire. They came over at times, John, so low I could take a stone or a baseball and hit them easily.
And that'd be illegal, right? That'd be illegal for any helicopter to fly that low, wouldn't it?
Well, at the time, I was taking lessons for my pilot's license, so I was pretty well up on regulations. But
mm-hmm.
I called the FAA, and they stated that the helicopter can fly low, but they have to leave 500 feet laterally between houses,
which they
did not. I mean, the house next to us was maybe 100 feet, and they came right over the top of our house many, many times. So the other thing that happened, they were taking pictures of us. Betty was in the store in Meriden, Connecticut, and this helicopter comes over the store low, and the guy is sitting in the doorway. The helicopter was a Huey UH-1. He's sitting in the doorway with a camera photographing Betty as she's going in the store and through the front window.
Huh.
Okay? Now, if this was an isolated incident, we'd say, maybe they were taking pictures for real estate or whatever, but it happened so many times afterwards that it just wasn't even funny. All of these helicopters, without exception, were either Huey UH-1s or Sikorsky Blackhawks. Now, I started getting irritated, so I wrote to all divisions of the military, the Federal Aviation Administration, the FBI, the CIA, National Guard, helicopter manufacturers. I sent them pictures, time and date of flight, compass heading, altitude, and not one of those agencies could tell me who owned the helicopters. I still have all the paperwork on them. And one day I got lucky. I was up on the roof putting shingles on the house, and a Blackhawk came over our house real low. Well, by then I had learned I took my camera with me everywhere. So I got several real good pictures of this thing. And I got off the roof immediately. I noticed the compass heading. It was headed towards Sikorsky aircraft, so I went down and I called the tower at Sikorsky, and they stated that it was an Army helicopter, and they had it coming into the tower at that time, okay? So I wrote and I filed a complaint with Sikorsky about the Army helicopter flying so low over my house. Now, what was neat was they apologized in writing for the low overflight of the Navy helicopter. Now, remember, the tower said it was an Army helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote back, and I questioned them on this, and they replied that it was an Army helicopter being flown by a Navy flight crew. Right. Now, the interesting thing is, I had some friends that have a sense of humor like myself. And this one fellow, Tommy, was in the military, and he built us an exact replica of a surface-to-air missile. So one afternoon, we're out there, and we hear the Hueys have a very distinct rotor noise. So you could hear them coming from quite a distance off. So as the thing's approaching, we drag this thing out, and we set it up on a cement pad in back of the house. When that helicopter got where he could see the backyard from over the roof of the house, that thing almost turned sideways. getting away from the house. So he was looking, okay? And the strange thing is, I've flown over the house many times. You can't see anything, but what I was told by some other military people was that this was to intimidate us to be quiet. But it didn't work because I'm too dumb to be plain and simple.
They picked the wrong guy, huh, Bob?
Yeah, exactly. Just to give an example, it didn't matter if we were in New Hampshire or Florida or where, they'd show up. Now, in Florida, there's a beautiful campground called Fort Christmas. It's near west of Cocoa Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So Betty and I had pulled in there with our trailer, and there's a lot of pine trees there, and we pulled into a parking spot where there was an opening, probably an eighth of an acre opening around this area. This little observation helicopter comes in. You know, it's like a little bubble that only seats two people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and the guy stops right over us, and he's taking pictures. So I get out my camera, and I got pictures of him taking pictures of us. Okay? I mean, that's how obvious it was. Now,
amazing.
Some other things that were interesting, when I was taking my lessons for a pilot license, I'm flying along, and my instructor told me 1,500 feet and 270 degrees, which is due west. So I'm tooling along up there nice, and all of a sudden on the right side, I look out and I see this black helicopter without numbers. So, of course, I turn the airplane and I start heading for it. Result being I got my butt chewed out and had to get back on course. But here's some facts on these things that I learned through
sure,
Freedom of Information.
You know, Bob, sorry to kind of interrupt you, but we're getting towards the half-hour break. I think this is great because I think you got everyone really interested, and now you're going to be coming back for a full show. And I want, when you come back, also talk about the wiretapping of your house and your experiences as an abductee. I think, you know, we will have a wonderful show with all these different stories that you have. And I really want to thank you for coming on tonight and giving us a little preview of what you're going to be talking about and updating us on this Harvard University experiment, all very fascinating. And it's really kind of frightening that there's an agenda out there to try to suppress all this stuff, you know?
Oh, sure. Well, look, Dr. John, it's been my pleasure, really, and I hope I have more than enough material for you next time.
Oh, listen, I'm sure you will, and I hope we can get, Becky to maybe, Betty to come on and say hello to us or just a quick hi.
I'll work on it. That's all I can tell you right now.
I know. Well, listen, give my best and my love to your wife and your daughter. And thanks a million, Bob. And I appreciate you coming on tonight at this late hour for you. And we'll see you in a month or so.
Well, thank you so much. And you have a great evening.
Hey, you too, Bob. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now. This is Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo. And we're live on History FM and liveparanormalradio.com. And we will be back in a quick few minutes with Helene Olson to do psychic reading. So get your phone call in and let the call screener know that you want a reading.
Live Paranormal Radio is the place to be, so join us at liveparanormal.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is Live Paranormal Radio, brought to you by LiveParanormal.com, the number one interactive online community for everything paranormal, horror, and sci-fi. LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit liveparanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.
Welcome back. You're listening to Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. And for this next half hour, we have a very, very special guest, psychic medium Helene Olson. And she is going to be doing psychic readings for our call-ins. And you can call at 619-639-4606. That's 619-639-4606. And please tell our call screener that you would like a psychic reading from Helene. So, Helene, are you there?
Yes, I am, John. Good evening.
Hey, good evening, Helene. Listen, thanks so much for being with us tonight. This is so exciting. When I posted that you were going to be doing psychic readings on the show, I got so many emails, people being very excited about that. So maybe before we do that, would you like to maybe tell us a little bit about yourself or anything you'd like the audience to know?
Well, you know, my name's Helene Olson, and you can find me at angelslighthouse.com. Since I talk to so many dimensions around the universe, and, you know, we're surrounded by many, multiple layers of dimensions, I don't know if psychic medium is the right term, but that's the term that most people use. But I really believe that anybody who is able to communicate with our departed loved ones, angels, or other beings, is a medium. And one thing I like to tell people is it doesn't really matter how you get that information. My personal experience has been a little bit unusual in that I had an enormous sudden opening all of a sudden of my third eye and the ability to communicate. And you can read about that on my website. But I believe that every single person is able to use their intuition to open up a channel to receive information. And I personally don't care how people get that information. I happen to hear voice most of the time, but I know plenty of great mediums who don't hear any voice, John, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, of course.
I mean, they absolutely, and you yourself, have an ability, John,
right,
that sometimes you choose to use. But we are all able to receive what I like to call data downloads. We are all able to open that channel in our hearts, our minds, our third eyes, in our soul, and connect with other realms. And many people receive that information simply by complete trust of their own intuition, really. And I think that anybody can open that.
You know, that's nice to hear because, again, it gives encouragement to others that we all have this ability. I wanted to say something quick about you. We got a whole line of callers here, and I know you're only going to be on for half an hour. And by the way, we're going to have Helene come on periodically and do psychic readings. And
thank you, John.
She's wonderful.
It so much.
You know, Helene also is a regular on the Jeff Wrench Show every first Friday of the month. As I mentioned when we were talking to Bob in the last half an hour, Becky and Helene have been working with me on psychometry, and I rate Becky and Helene in a 90%+ accuracy category, which the best I've ever had before was 60%+. So they're really phenomenal. And Helene has just astounded me, and I could give you 100 different types of examples. But also, let me give the phone number out again, 619-639-4606, if you'd like a reading from Helene. Helene, let's take a call. There's we have a call from Doug from New York, and I grew up in New York, so I have to give Doug the first reading. Hello, Doug. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, what part of New York are you from?
I live up near Syracuse.
Oh, wonderful, beautiful area. I grew up in Westchester County. Listen, thanks for being on the air and calling, and you could ask Helene if you had any questions before she starts.
Not really.
As specific as you can be would be helpful because we're on a radio show and I only have a moment to assess your question. So do you have a specific question about your life or a situation you're involved in or even someone who's alive that you want some information about?
Well, I just recently lost my father, and he passed in December, and then two of my close friends lost their dads within a week of each other, one this past Saturday and one the Saturday before.
What's your dad's first name, Doug?
My dad's first name is Dennis.
I'm just focusing on Dennis's energy. He was sick for quite a while, is that correct?
No, actually.
Who am I picking up on that was sick for quite a while? An older male, not very old. Someone maybe in their 60s or early
70s. Probably Troy's dad, my friend Troy's dad, because he was sick for a while.
Okay, this fellow that I'm seeing right now stepping forward is quite a... If he walked into a room, you knew he was there. Is that Troy's dad? He had quite a personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he's stepping up first. He was a joker, too. He liked to laugh, and he's has a big smile on his face. He's giving me the feeling of smiling. He wants your friend to know that he is fine, that there is nothing that your friend needs forgiveness for. It was apparently very difficult for your friend to be around his dad when he was sick. It really hurt his heart. It made him very uncomfortable. He didn't know how to deal with it. Does that make sense to you, Doug?
Yeah.
Okay. And the dad wants him to get the message that it's okay. He understood the discomfort that this young man had. Your friend really had a hard time coping with this emotionally. He just didn't know what to do, and a lot of times he was at odds with himself. It wasn't his dad he was at odds with. It was just something very, very uncomfortable for him to experience, and he didn't know how to make his father feel better, and he couldn't make himself feel better, and sometimes he stayed away, and then he felt guilty about not going, and, you know, that kind of back-and-forth thing with this friend of yours. And this dad wants him to know that it's okay, that there's nothing that he needs to feel guilty about now, that he did the best he could with his own personality and his own ability to deal with his emotions, and the dad understood that. Do you understand that message, Doug?
Yeah.
Okay, and I want you to tell your friend that so that he feels somewhat healed or better by this, okay?
Will do. I might be seeing him this weekend.
Okay, well, you could give him a call, too, and tell him that his dad came through. He's quite a strong personality. When he wants something, he's not going to give up till he gets it, so that's why he stepped forward first. And your dad's first name again?
Dennis.
Dennis?
Yes.
I'm asking this fellow to please bring Dennis through. Dennis fell down one day and basically passed on, is that correct?
In a roundabout way, yes.
Okay, it was just like very tragically sudden and didn't really get better, and he may have taken him a few days to pass or whatever, but it was not, it was unexpected from most accounts, the way I'm hearing this, is that correct?
Yeah, he died of a heart attack and actually was sitting at a computer and had fallen over in the chair and was found later that day by my mom.
Mm-hmm. Well, no one was more surprised than him. Actually, sometimes when I come across these kind of tragic situations, the person who passed actually knew they were sick and were ignoring it, but in this case, your father was not aware that he was sick. Does that make sense to you?
He knew he had heart problems. He had a pacemaker, but he was under the impression everything was fine.
No, he had no premonition, no idea that he was going to pass. This was something he was watching carefully. He didn't think anything would happen, you know, that kind of thing. a lot of times I run across people who really did know they were sick and just never bothered going to the doctor, you know. But that wasn't the case with Dad. He absolutely had no idea that he was going to go. And your mom is really, the way he's telling me this is your mom really needs a lot of support. She's had a hard time moving past this incident, which happened recently, as you said, in December. And I think that your mom is very aware that your dad is coming around her, okay? And in some way she wants to know that it's him, and in another way she wants to say it's her imagination. So you can tell her that he's definitely coming around her. And when he does come around, all she needs to do is acknowledge him and say, "Hi, I know you're here. I love you." You know, I mean, she's really had a tough way to go with this. It's been very hard for her to cope emotionally with his leaving. And I'm not just saying that because he left recently. I'm saying it because it's just hard for her. She's had a hard time getting past this. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's really every day, like, it's not, the way I'm feeling this is stagnant. It's not really, her grieving process isn't getting any better for her. It's, like, very, very slow. Some people get through it a little easier than she does, you know. It's never easy, Doug, so don't misunderstand me, but...
Oh, I know.
She is not going to a grieving group?
Not that I know of, no.
She needs to do that. She needs to do that to share this experience with other people so that she can vent and release it, okay? She
yep.
needs to do that. You tell her I said so. There are plenty of grief groups around, and they're all free. And it's a nice way to connect with people who are going through the same roller coaster ride and the same difficult process. And it will help her to go. She needs to connect with others. I mean, in some ways, she's withdrawn since this has happened, and she needs to not do that, okay, Doug?
Yep.
Okay. I hope I helped you in some way, Doug.
You did.
Okay. And Dennis, thank you. Okay. So the purpose of him stepping forward is to let me know that the mom needs help. And you can help her with that, Doug. Okay.
Yep.
He sends his love. He sends his love. And he's sorry. And I'm telling him that there's nothing, he didn't do anything to be sorry for. That was out of his control, and oh, he's visited you too, huh, Doug?
I felt his presence second night that I was at the house after he passed.
Yeah.
I also heard that he played a joke on another friend of mine.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Nice, very nice, calm energy. Very calm kind of guy. Yeah, lovely. Yeah. Thank you, Dennis. Love and light to you, Dennis. He's fine. He's really fine. Okay?
Yep.
Thank you for calling in, Doug. I appreciate it, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
You're
and,
welcome.
And God bless you. Take care of yourself, okay?
You too.
Helene?
Yes.
One before we take our next call, actually, we only have about 10 or 12 minutes left. I want a question for you that I know I get many times in my research, because a lot of my work in spiritualism, and I teach, you know, Enochian magic and techniques and communicating with angels and whatever kind of entities, people want to know, well, how do you know the people or the entities you're connecting with are good or are holy angels and not evil or bad spirits? And it's a very good question, because I think we should test spirits, and we shouldn't just accept a spirit's word that he's a good angel or a good spirit. And it's a tough question. I know some of the most incredible saints that ever lived that had ecstasies with God never were 100% sure what their contact was. They, even though everything told them it was good, they always had that little doubt, which is good because it kept their humility. So I thought, you know, if you don't mind, maybe you can give us your take on that. How do you know the angels and spirits that communicate with you and talk to you are good and not mischievous or evil?
Well, that's a very interesting question, John, and many people disregard that aspect of this work. They think that they will go out there and use a Ouija board or try to contact other worlds, and I do not recommend that. Unfortunately, being in the universe, in any part of the universe, is exactly the same as being on one of those busy New York City streets. Well, you know, most of the people walking by mean well and they're nice, but there are some who don't. And anybody who does this work has run across pranksters, difficult energies, aliens, whatever, you know, whatever kind of being you can possibly imagine, who is not good. And sometimes they come up and pretend to be an angel or try to pretend to be an angel. And I think that once someone starts doing this work, you become very in tune with vibrational frequency and very in tune with absolutely trusting your gut. And to this day, at this moment, if something comes along and it does not feel right, I absolutely reject it. I don't care. You know, it's just, you do have to be careful. And it's just like doing anything. You know, you have to be careful.
You know, maybe what you said, your gut, your intuition is really the best thing. I know when I started, and people who bought my book and tried the technique, that's the first question they ask me. And I say, you know, I would never have put something out there that I didn't think was good and holy and of the good angels. I can't prove it, but all the signs of goodness and holiness and of godliness are what I feel when I do it. And therefore, that's my guess. But, you know, I guess, too, you know, Helene, we have to admit we're really on uncharted territory and we're making the best guess we can and we're trying to do the best we can. Our heart's in the right place. And if we make a mistake or we get messages from a negative entity, it's like in the world, too. We sometimes trust people and they betray us. So I guess it's the same kind of, you know, thing that could happen both in the physical world and the spiritual world.
Well, it is, and the thing is, one of the big signs of something being negative is anybody who's starting out in this work. If you get someone who claims to be a guide or who wants to help you, you have to listen to that very carefully, because angels, good spirits, anything that's truly of the divine does not make deals. They don't offer you rewards. They don't give you prizes and cookies, okay? and so you really, really have to be careful. What they are is speaking plain truth to help guide you without sort of saying, well, if you do this, I'll do that. And I have known a couple people over the years who've got involved in that, and they've gotten in a lot of difficult trouble. So, you know, the first thing is trust your gut, trust the vibration that you're feeling. If there's any question whatsoever, don't talk to it. I personally still to this day identify angels very clearly in the name of God, in the light of God, and in the view of God. And many tricksters cannot stand in the light of God for very long. So if you do that three times, generally they'll run away if they're just playing a joke on you.
Interesting. Don't, you know,
you find that true in Enochian chanting? You know, there's a lot of...
Exactly. You know, and maybe what you do and what I do with Enochian magic, a lot of people ask me, what's the difference between that and a Ouija board? And Ouija boards are very dangerous, because I basically say a Ouija board, you're just throwing open the barn door and letting anything in, and that's not good. Where the technique that I teach and maybe the techniques you use, we control what we try to let in to a certain extent. As again, I mentioned, we're in uncharted territory, but some of these occult techniques are very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing and you don't have the protection. But I wanted to ask you another question. I know a lot of listeners are curious. When you do the psychometry, like you and Becky have, I know, tested probably over 100 archaeological artifacts. Can you explain what you feel? Like when you either look at a picture, I know you can either hold an object or look at a picture. You have that ability. Or even if I tell you about it, you can tune in on it. But what do you actually feel, let's say, when you hold an object or look at a picture of an archaeological artifact?
I can't even respond adequately to the question, because I'll be very honest to the audience. If I hold an object, I don't get very much. It's very interesting, because I get more out of a picture or out of actually having you tell me what the object is and having it pop up in my mind what it looks like. And you know that, John. And so the interesting aspect of that is that I have no idea where the information comes from.
Is it audio? Is it verbal? Do you see scenes?
I see the pictures. I see energy around objects. There have been times when you've told me about something that you liked or were looking at or had seen, and I can describe what the object looks like without looking at a picture. And I can't really teach that to people because I assume it's just a gift. I don't know how to describe where that comes from.
You know, you did something I remember incredible. I gotta tell the story, but I got this reliquary cross. I think it's probably around from maybe 10th to 12th century, and I didn't send you a picture, but I told you about it, and you described it to me, and I think you told me it was brown and had cross hatching and whatever, and I said, no, Helene, it's black. There's no markings on it. And when we got off the phone, I went down and picked it up, and actually you were right. I was thinking of a different artifact, and I thought, you know, this is a very good scientific controlled experiment, because people could say, how do you know she's not reading your mind? Which would be a good trick in itself. I mean, you know, but if you were reading my mind, you would have not described it. I think that's amazing, and you've done that many, many times. But
oh, my husband hates it when I read his mind.
Uh-oh, he can't hide anything from you. That's kind of frightening to be married to a psychic.
Yeah, it drives him crazy. I try not to do it, but I don't even do it intentionally. It's just like I kind of look at it as sort of tuning a radio. It's like I know him very well, and so my frequency is right on his spot, and I can say, no, we're going to go out to eat tomorrow night, which we weren't talking about at all, and then that thought just flits into my head because I've picked up the signal somehow. That's the only way I can describe it.
Wow. You know, I got to say, for people that are listening and may be skeptical about, oh, by the way, and psychics are not 100% accurate. So, I mean, you know, give them a sometimes, too. Helene's the real deal, believe me. In over 40 years of psychic research, of a psychic from east to west coast. I mean, I'm not saying the other ones weren't good, but when you get somebody that just stands above them and is really gifted, you have to be very... The other thing is, when I first contacted Helene and we became friends, I was talking to her one night, and we were talking about angelic communications, and I was sitting in my armchair, and all of a sudden, I felt like there was somebody behind me, and there was just a wall. There was nobody. I've never felt this feeling in years and years living in this house, and I turned around, and I'm looking at a blank wall. And Helene says to me, do you feel the light body? Or I can't remember what it was.
There's a light being that came to visit you. Yeah.
I said, yeah. Then all of a sudden, I started feeling my hands tingling or getting warm. And Helene says, do you feel the tingling yet? And I almost fell off the chair. So,
I don't know what that is. That's sort of like remote viewing. I mean, when I do healing work and things like that, I can often see people and what beings are around them and, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well,
but,
you know.
It's interesting. I think that anybody who opens their intuitive channel has the ability to increase their gift or their talent, but, you know, we really can't say how far someone can go with it. I think everybody's able to get data downloads, to trust their intuition, and to absolutely be psychic. But I don't want people to hang their hat on, hearing voices and seeing visions and all of that kind of thing. It doesn't make you less of a psychic. It's just a different way of using the same gift.
Right. You know, I wanted to say, unfortunately, you know, we only have probably about 3 or 4 minutes left. I'm not enough time for a caller. And I wanted to mention that please visit Helene's website, angelslighthouse.com, and she does do readings. And also, don't forget, you know, Dr. John at Giza Pyramid. DrJohnRadio.com. I just got that URL because I thought it'd be easy to remember. DrJohnRadio.com. And we have information on Helene and a link to her site also. But again, she's really wonderful. I know you have a wonderful family, but is it difficult at times for them to live with somebody who's psychic? Because I'm sure people, when you're out at parties or socializing, people know your gift. You're well known in the New England area. Do you kind of lose your privacy?
Well, you just asked me two questions, I think, John. First of all, I can't find my own socks because I'm human. And I think that people who have the gift of being psychic tend to be, not everybody, but can tend to be kind of scattered in everyday thought. So it's very interesting among many colleagues and psychics I've talked to, it's very hard to read people who are closest to you because you don't have a blank page. You have the idea of what you'd hope they were thinking and what you'd like to have happen to them. And it sort of overshadows what you could possibly get psychically because you can't get rid of your subconscious, you know. I have been kind of tormented at public gatherings and parties because people will walk up to me and say, oh, by the way, did you know this happened to me? And can you talk to my mom who passed away and whatever? And it can be a little bit intrusive, but I think I do the best I can to help as many people as I can.
Sure. Well, you know, Helene, I really want to thank you for being on tonight. And I apologize to the callers on hold. But Helene is going to be back periodically, so she'll be on again. And we really appreciate you doing this. It's just wonderful. And I wish you the best with your work and your everything you do. I know you do a lot of wonderful service projects and you help many people. Helene also is not the person in it for the money or for fame. She has a good heart and a very spiritual person. And I'm blessed to be your friend. But again, don't forget.
No, you can visit. I'm blessed to have you as a friend, John. And I really, really appreciate you having me on it. I'm honored.
Well,
thank you.
I'm waiting for the lottery number to win. So, but anyway,
I haven't gotten it yet.
Maybe next year. But Helene, listen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank
God
you,
bless
John.
You and your family, and we'll get you on again soon. You take care now.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is John DeSalvo with Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal on fmradio.com. And I guess we're going to try to wrap it up here. I want to make a couple quick announcements again. Next week, first I want to thank Bob Luca and Helene Olson for being with us tonight. You can see how both of them could be on for hours, and they're so fascinating. Again, Bob will be on, I think, next month or in September. We're pretty much booked up with guests into October, so I'm real excited about that. So make sure that you check the listing of our upcoming guests on drjohnradio.com, and you can get links to all their websites, their books, and contact information for them. And I guess I want to thank my both guests tonight, Bob Luca and Helene Olson. And I want to thank LiveParanormalRadio.com for hosting this program. And the owner Rob and Carla at Master Control. And ClassicalIndia.com for allowing me to use their music. And I guess I want to thank most especially you, the listener, for tuning in tonight and listening to the program. And don't forget to check out all our programs and guests at DrJohnRadio.com. And also, you can listen to past programs on the radio archives. Again, I want to thank Live Paranormal. Anyway, until next week, good night, and may God be with you.